Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we research teen culture so you can focus on connection. My name is Caleb Hatchett, and I'm here with Carly Duke and Tobin Hodges. And today we got a full lineup for you. We'll be starting with Tobin's Trends, talking about a new thing hitting Spotify called Spotify Jam. We'll be talking about digital SATs, Adderall, and the shortage that's happening. We've got a question about how to talk to teens about violence.
Yeah, this one, you just said that's quite the list that we got you. Going on.
Pretty big list.
Yeah.
So I think we should start a little light. Let's start with Tobin's Trend this week. So this week, if you haven't heard, Spotify added something to their profile, to their platform called Spotify Jam, which, you know, was a little confusing. I didn't really know exactly what it was at first. But basically, the gist is that if you are listening to something on Spotify, you can invite a friend or somebody to jam along with you and add songs to the queue and kind of like create your own little playlist together. You do have to have a Spotify premium account to do this, but it's free for users to join and add songs to the jam. Let me rephrase that. You have to have a premium account to host one, but anybody who has a free account can join and add songs to a jam. If you're in person, anyone in a jam can control what's playing on the speaker, and the host of the jam is able to toggle whether or not the guests are able to control what's playing. So it's kind of like a, you know, young kids won't know this. It's kind of like a jukebox, but, ooh, you know, for Spotify.
Yeah, I like that.
And unlike a jukebox, you can control somebody putting, you know, 7 Tom Jones songs or something. So
right, all star on repeat.
Yeah. Skip.
Shout out John Mulaney for his Salt and Pepper Diner bit. But I do think that this is a really cool thing to, like, you know, add in. Carly, you had mentioned off the air that it's kind of like Netflix whenever you wanted to stream a movie or something together, which is pretty cool. But I love this idea. I think it's great that, like, if you're at a party or if you're, like, you know, at a get together or something, and you can kind of have like a, hey, I'm going to start a playlist and feel free to add to it. You can get all cute, add a QR code or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, what do y'all think?
I think for me, like, it's, I'm just seeing this because I had a couple of high school boys in my student ministry come up to me. We do a road trip to Rio Dos, New Mexico for mission trips. And they're like, can we make a playlist? I'm like, sure, that's a 13-hour drive. And they've got like 10 hours on it already. And there are some, I've looked through it, some songs that might put me to sleep if I'm driving. And so I just think, the idea of like, hey guys, I'm going to start, you know, Spotify Jam, and then y'all can add just as we go. That's fun.
Yeah, I like the idea that you can listen to stuff together. And so you can do it at a party, like you're saying, if you're together. Or, I don't know, if teenagers want to connect with friends and be like, hey, we're listening to this. Tobin's about to, I think, go through some ideas of some playlists that you could put together, some things to listen to. But, hey, we're going to listen to this at the same time. So you're listening together.
So it can go through different, like, if I join a Spotify jam on, like, my phone, even if we're not in the same room together, it'll also play through my phone.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of like if you were listening to the same radio station together.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a very antiquated thing to do. Like, you know, now it's like you're curating your own radio station. So if you are, like, a person that likes to curate playlists and stuff, it's a cool way to be like, hey, come join my jam and, you know, tell me what you think. And maybe I'll take requests. Like, you're kind of like your own little, you know, in-house radio disc jockey. So.
Well, and I'll say it. This is, when we're recording, we're like a week and a half ahead. So, but today, 1989 dropped. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you're wanting to listen to the new Taylor Swift album, you could do it with a friend and you're listening at the same time together. And then whether you're texting about it or whatever, you know that you're together instead of being like, did you hear this? Well, what song are you on? You can do it together, which I think is pretty cool.
I think the road trip aspect is a great use of it too, of, hey, I'm going to start this off, but since I'm driving, you guys feel free to add things in or whatever. And, like, I don't know about you guys. I get really, like, anxious when people are like, hey, like, put on a playlist or whatever. Yes. I'm like, no, like, tell me what to play or whatever. Or, like, if I'm in a car or a situation and I don't like the playlist, I'd love to, like, you know, shout out my wife who always listens to terrible music. But if there's a way to, like, add in my own things of, like, you know, at least I can have some of my own style in there. So I also think, you know, it would behoove me to just mention, like, hey, there's some new stuff out there today. Like, the Blink-182 came back with an album called One More Time. So they, if you listen, I mean, if y'all are younger than I am, but I grew up loving them, and they went through a lot of, like, trials and tribulations as a group. And then Mark Hoppus got cancer. And so they kind of, like, reformed in and like, you know, to be friends again and make sure that he's doing okay. And in that reconciliation came an album. And so it's pretty good. It's pretty emotional. Like it's definitely Blink-182. And so it's not a young teen listen probably. So don't listen, let your young teens listen to it. But, and if you're a teacher, don't listen to it in your classroom.
That's fair.
But good stuff. Also, Carly mentioned we're recording this on Taylor Swift 1989 day, but it's also day one of the World Series for our Texas Rangers. Right. So we're listening to a lot of Creed in my household because it's kind of taking over. The Rangers had said that Creed was their you know, battle songs. And now like Kirk Cousins.
I was going to say the Vikings.
Yeah, the Vikings are doing it. And then some other teams are like getting in on the trend. So
I saw Creed themselves. Yep. Like the band made a playlist like for games.
And
like,
I think
games.
That they are actually like getting back in the studio. They had some TikTok the other day that was like a teaser of them back in the studio. So.
Why not? Right, yeah, baby. I mean, let's go.
Yeah,
take me higher.
There's not. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah. So you know, this is just a really cool way to get into the digital world, I think, and maybe, you know, I don't know, kind of have like your own little radio station. But so as our world gets more digital and things get a little weird, that also has gone into the way that our students are taking the SAT. Mm-hmm. Did you guys take the SAT?
Yes.
Okay.
I hated it.
Yeah. Yeah. I did miserable at it.
I liked the ACT better.
Yes. Same. Well, what did you think?
I took the SAT. And the SAT has like two different versions. I think there's even one like with the essay. I don't know how that affects points, but I was like, yeah, I don't want to be taking the
essay. So sometime after I was in college or high school, in probably whatever, when you take it, they used to be for 1600 points and there was a math and a reading section, and now it's like for 2400 or there was with a writing section as well. I didn't take the writing section. It was only 1600 whenever I took it,
but I took the SAT once and got a you know, scholarship at ACU and was like, I'm not taking any more than I have to. But we still did like PSAT every year in high school, stuff like that. That was prepping us for it.
I had the exact opposite experience. I did so poorly on the SAT because it used to be like, okay, so here, this will play into what we're talking about today. But it used to be you would wake up on a Saturday morning, go to some school you don't even know.
Yes.
And be in a room with an administrator you don't know, and school teachers, you know, teacher and a students you don't know. And full disclosure, because I'm an idiot, and if you're talking about your teens today, I was very distracted because it was a Saturday morning, and I didn't want to be there. And there was a very cute girl sitting next to me very distracted, and I was an idiot, so I did very bad on it. But I took the ACT later on and did really well. So I've also seen kids kind of have. Like they do really well on one and really bad on
the other.
They're
different strengths. Yeah. And that's what I've heard is take both and then see which one you like better. And then if you need to retake, take one of them. But yeah, when I took mine, you had to go in person. There were sixth graders in front of me at this. I was a junior in high school. And they were like, yeah, this is my fourth time to take the SAT. No. And so I was in my head of like, oh no, I am so far behind. These like middle schoolers have taken this so many times. Why am I just taking it for the first time? So I was intimidated for sure, and it was a very stressful experience, which is why I'm glad that they're making a play at doing it digital.
Yeah. So it originally started in 1926, so it is literally almost 100 years old. The standard version took about 3 hours and 15 minutes, and it had 154 questions. This one supposedly takes 2 hours and 14 minutes, and it has 98 questions. So to me, that's already a big win.
Yeah, so it takes an hour.
Yes. The crazy thing about this is that the studies are saying it's more approachable and less stressful, but this new digital version, this blew my mind. It has the ability to assess the students in between the modules and give them easier or harder questions based on their performance, which is just wild to me. Like one part of me is like, that doesn't seem fair, you know?
Right.
So if you just do really bad on the first section, you're like, oh no, this test is really easy, you know? But the other part of me is like, okay, good on you for like, not like. Because I don't know about you guys, like if I know that I'm not doing well on a test, like I'm done after five questions. Right. And so, I mean, this literally happened to me as an adult when I was taking a certification test like 3 years ago for a teaching certification. Like I started with the science section and there was questions on there that I'm like, I haven't done this in years. And it just tanked me for the rest of the time. And so some part of me kind of likes that.
Do they shift your score? Like if they start giving you easier questions with that?
My guess would be there's probably some complicated algorithm that gives you like if you got easier questions, but you got them right, it's maybe slightly better, but not as good as if you took the harder questions and kind of whatever. The other cool thing about this is it added tools like a countdown clock. You can mark questions for review and go back to them. There's a math reference sheet built into it, and there's a built-in graphing calculator. So the days of like ripping out the paper at the end of the test booklet that has all the math formulas and stuff on it, those are kind of over because all this. So I'm pro going digital in these situations, and I just think that it's very interesting to see how this kind of plays out in the next couple of years.
So my question, and I don't know the answer to this, and I should have looked at this, do you still have to take it at a certain time, or can you take it from home?
You know, it didn't say in the article, but my guess would be is that it probably has to be some sort of adjudicated room, because like just like the standardized state testing now is mostly pretty much all online, but you still have to take it with someone that's watching and making sure that you're not, my guess would be it's still probably the same, but now because it's digital, they probably could theoretically do this in their own high schools and stuff. And I know that that's happening more because I think the days of going to a random high school on Saturday morning is over. Because I know that like my own son has taken the PSAT in school and stuff. And so I don't know. I'm going to find out in the next couple of years because my own kid. But I'm not sure.
We'll post the links so you can look into that.
And I know during COVID, I had students, even coming out of it that would take it. And like they have the eye tracking technology, stuff like that. That is, I don't know how they do it, but is really accurate on being able to tell if you are cheating or not, or if the person who's in the room watching you is giving you answers. It's really technology that I don't fully understand, but they say is pretty accurate. Sure. And I'm all on board with this. I took the SAT when my brother was graduating. So I had to take it in a different city. I took it in Abilene and like knew nobody. I like went to the bathroom before it started and was just like so nervous. Mm-hmm. And, it's interesting, and it kind of leads into the next topic, but, students still get nervous taking tests, and one of the things that, even when I was in high school, peers were doing was taking Adderall to help and, lock in, and...
Disclaimer, do not do that.
Do not do this. And we'll get into this. We have stats to show you why this is not smart. But what is Adderall? It's a prescription. Amphetamine, right?
Amphetamine.
Amphetamine, nailed it. Primarily.
I like amphetamine or whatever you just said. Amphetamine.
Not taking the SAT, so cut me some slack. Primarily used to treat ADHD. While not everyone who uses Adderall is addicted to it, an increasing number of young adults and college students, and I'd say even high school students, are using Adderall to get high and increase focus. The misuse and overuse of Adderall can create an addiction because of the way it interacts with your brain. And two, almost just like, I've had people, friends who like felt like they need it on a big test. And they're like fiending, like I need to find it or else I can't do this on my own. And just the way it interacts with the brain, and it's for ADHD who have a hard time focusing in the way that their synapses are made and firing off to connect them. And so whatever like person who synapses are not having those problems, I think people view it like a superpower drug.
Yeah, and I knew people that would take it to help them study longer overnight or to if they had a really big study session. I will throw some stats out because I think you're right. For so long, I think people thought of this as a college program, college problem. But some middle school and high schools in the United States, 1 in 4 teens report that they've abused prescription stimulants for ADHD during the prior year.
And it's not just Adderall. There's other ADHD drugs they also use as well.
Right. But where they're getting it is leftover medication. So if there's someone in their house that's taking ADHD medication, they might take it from them or they're getting it from peers. What I thought was interesting is students who said that they've used marijuana in the past month, they're 4 times more likely to use ADHD medication. So if you...
That's interesting.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Mm. It's a gateway. It's the gateway drug, apparently.
Do you think it's because the marijuana mellows them out and the Adderall kind of brings them back up?
Maybe.
I mean, like for real.
Yeah, there are really people that will take both.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so, and if you've used ADHD medication currently or in the past, you're 2.5 times more likely to misuse it. Hmm. And so I just think that's something worth knowing about your student. If there is a risk factor, if there is someone in your house that needs to take it for a legitimate reason, make sure you're talking to other teens or other children in the house about what that can look like, because I mean, obviously we'll post links if you want to look more into, we don't have time to get into this today, but side effects, warning signs of if they're misusing, because it can have some really negative effects. But the shortage, that's kind of something that is big right now. I saw an article that Time Magazine said that a year ago, they made, the FDA made an official announcement about the shortage. Mm-hmm. And what I think it says 41 million ADHD patients are receiving refill delays for Adderall.
Yeah. My wife was one of them. Which is funny too, because what I've noticed too is my friends are getting diagnosed with ADHD later on in life. Like Haley, my wife, was, I think, a freshman in college. Mm. But yeah, I remember like the start of this year, Haley had a really hard time just like getting the medicine. Mm-hmm. And just for her, it's just so interesting because of the way that, you know, you need it to function. And especially like if you do have ADHD, that it's like, you can tell a difference. Like I can tell a difference with Haley and just how she functions and her drive. But it's also interesting just speaking personally with her. It's as someone like who has ADHD, I know she struggles a lot with like I am, the fact that I need a medicine to function, and that just plays at her, you know, pride and self drive, which is what I found interesting just even with her. But yeah, it's just a hard time. And I think the FDA, people are saying that the FDA is changing the structure of the drug because of the long-term effects that it's had on adults that they've seen.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, coming from the school side of things, when I was teaching, the easy complaint from a teacher is, well, we're getting overdiagnosed like children, which, you know, may be true, but yeah. I also think that maybe we're also realizing things that, like, I mean, I've had people lovingly tell me, man, did you never get diagnosed? I'm like, no, I did not. And so there's probably a world where I probably have needed this at points in my life, you know, if not still. And I think that now parents are more aware because of their own struggles in their own walks through this stuff that they're getting their kids. And like I said, there's truth to both sides. There probably is some overdiagnosing. But because of that, we're seeing for the first time ever adults that have been on this since elementary school.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, maybe this is something that we should have like either like I needed to wean off of it, or this person's like, I still need this my whole life.
Yeah.
And on top of the fact that now we have a bunch of younger kids getting this drug. So it's just become this, you know, huge need that the country has not expected, I think.
And it's not like a light thing. Like it's the side effects, even just in like the immediate, it kills your appetite, you know, it does make you wired. You know, the fact that there are elementary school kids and stuff that need it, you know, it's not just a thing that's like, yeah, it's just like taking allergy medicine. It does a lot.
Right. Well, and I think what's so fascinating, and I encourage our listeners, if you're interested, go look into it, but no one can explain the shortage.
No one wants it.
They're just all passing it off of like, no, it's the FDA's fault. No, it's the DEA's fault. Like, no one wants to take ownership.
Which is really sketchy, if we're being honest. Like, that alone is like, why are you doing that? Like, what's in here that we don't know about? You know, that kind of stuff. And so that makes me get really conspiracy theorist real fast.
Because there's not like a, like, there's, it shouldn't, there shouldn't be a shortage, right? Like,
well, not for this long, not for a full year.
It's literally been a year and 2 weeks that, and there still has not been an answer. And so, like, if you're going to openly, as the FDA, admit that we have a shortage and then spend a whole year not doing anything about it, it's gonna be some questions there. So,
right. So where this leads into our next one is there are some of these maybe hot button topics that we're learning about, Adderall being one, but right now there are some big things going on in our country and in our world, between the Israel and Gaza situation. Gun violence in schools is, I mean, bigger and more prevalent than ever before. We have an upcoming election. So there are some political things that your teenagers are seeing on social media. They're hearing about it at school. And I think gone are the days when students kind of were in their own bubble and didn't know about this stuff. And so I want to talk about today. I don't want to talk about specific political issues. We're not here to get into that.
Right.
But I do want to talk about how can we talk about these things with our teenagers in a way that's going to be calming, in a way that's not going to cause more fear, but where they feel safe coming to you. Because, I mean, I was talking to someone this week that they were like, I saw a horribly violent video on my social media feed that came from the Israel situation. And your teenagers are not exempt from seeing that. And so if you're just like, we're just going to pretend like this isn't happening, that's not realistic anymore.
Yeah.
And I also think from conversations I'm having with parents especially, there are students who are asking questions like, right now, will there be another world war? Will I have to be drafted? Like, am I safe in my school? Ugh. Like, just across the board that they're asking. And so let's talk about—
And all valid questions.
Yes, yeah. No, they are valid questions. Yeah. But I think to tell them like, no, don't worry about that. That's not something you need to worry about is not helpful either. And so I'm going to post, I saw this post from Dr. Becky at Goodinside, and it's from Instagram. That's a long title. But I'll post that link that she kind of talked about in light of the Israel situation of how can we talk about this in a way that educates. And so I'm taking some of her stuff, but I also just want to have a conversation about like, how do we have these conversations with our teens? And I think the first step is bring it up and then let them ask questions. So that doesn't mean that you're going to sit down and be like, let me educate you on the entire history of this, or let me tell you about all the gun stats in our country, but just say, hey, what have you heard about this situation?
And it means that if you do that, you don't have to have the answers as a parent either.
Right.
You can just say, ask me questions, and your answer could literally be, you know what, I don't know. And then y'all can maybe research it together, or maybe you just leave it at that of, I don't have the answer to that, and I don't know the answer to that. This literally like happened to me when I was, because when I was in school, and I was I turned 18 in 2003, and that was like right when the war in Iraq started. Mm-hmm. And so when I was signing up for the draft, because some people forget that we still do that. Like 18-year-old men still do that every year. When I was signing up for the draft, I had this worst case scenario, irrational fear of, oh man, like this could happen. Like I'm going to get drafted. I'm going to go to Iraq. I'm going to die. Like I'm, you know, and I am so very thankful that, you know, I have family members and people in my life and, you know, in general, that there are people that volunteer to go do this stuff because I was not built for that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I had auditions with the Air Force President's Band when I was, because my grandfather's in the Air Force, and because of, you know, 9/11 and the Iraq War, I didn't feel like I could safely go to the Air Force. And like that literally stopped me from even pursuing that. Not that I was going to do it, but like I just didn't even think I could even entertain that idea. Yeah. So I'm thankful that people sign up for it, but these are real things that I feared about whenever I was in high school. And so, you know, this is very similar in the fact that there's a huge conflict happening right now. And these are real questions that have got to be going through, especially your anxious students and teens.
I remember getting like the letter for the draft and having to sign it when I was 18. It was like the Hogwarts letter, but like 10 million times worse. and then it was just so far off my radar. And then all of a sudden, like, even though realistically, like, right, I probably won't get drafted, it's still just real. Yeah. And like, again, I think teens are more connected than they've ever been on, especially like world events. And so I think just ignoring it, you can't, just because they can't ignore it either, because I'm sure it's all over their feeds and all over everything that they see, and people are talking about it. And so I think bringing it up and sparking a conversation and, not knowing the answer is fine, and responding with, I don't know, or, hey, what do you think?
Right.
You know, just to spark a conversation on it.
Well, and let them lead, because if they don't want to know too much, like if you have a younger middle school student, you don't need to get into the details that you might with an 18-year-old who just had to sign up for the draft.
Mm-hmm.
That's a totally different thing. But I will say, where you can tell the truth, use real words. Mm-hmm. So don't kind of dance around it. Use actual words. If they're asking you about it, they want to know the truth. They want to know answers, and you'd rather be the one to tell them than them go Google it and come up with all these news articles that are going to scare them. And with that, I mean, stop and take the time to respond. And so make this a conversation. You don't have to make it like super formal, like sit down and let us talk about what is happening in the world, but make eye contact and tell them like, hey, I think this is serious enough and I respect you enough to actually have a conversation and connect with you about it.
And if you're going to research things or have them research things, if they're older in high school and stuff, like encourage them to not only use like one source.
That's good. And a
reminder of this, and I have adults that need this reminder too, of everything you read in a news story is not going to be factual these days. That's just not, that's not the world we live in. That's not the political landscape we live in. And just everything, it's like, it's kind of like when you watch a documentary and you know that, like, man, the point of this documentary is to make you get fired up about one side of an argument. And, you know, you have to remind yourself there is two sides to everything. And you have to, like, let's try to make sure that we're not, you know, reading only fear mongering articles on whatever side it is, and just kind of making sure that we're getting, like, actual factual, you know, information to make sure that we have educated opinions about things. Mm-hmm.
So. And then finally, to kind of wrap this up, I'm just going to say, take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. If this is something that is triggering for you, it's okay to tell your student, hey, like, even if you're not in the middle of a conversation, but if you're having a hard day because you saw something in the news that really bothered you or made you upset, to say, hey, I need a little space because I need to take care of myself. Yeah. Because what you're doing in that is, if you're telling them what's going on instead of just lashing out or being like, I need space, like, if you're telling them your thought process, you're modeling for them how to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And then if they get in that situation, they can kind of say, oh, I've seen this before, and my parents modeled this well, or my teacher modeled this well. And so in this, encourage open dialogue, encourage, like, future conversations so that they'll keep coming back to you. And, like I said, not going to Google to find the answers.
Yeah. And I think just treating them, you know, with a dialogue, like Tobin said, instead of trying to give answers mm-hmm. or shut it down, you know, just to encourage that conversation. And I think in a lot of ways it helps you educate yourself as you're taking care of yourself mm-hmm. and also be able to reinforce, like, hey, you know, let's look and balance the fear side with the side that we are safe. And, you know, even be able to talk about, you know, how you get through tough things, and just to kind of help build that resilience and mindset in them. But, you know, here at Teen Life Podcast, we believe that teenagers are not a problem to be solved. And so, you know, whether that's viewing them as, you know, peers, equals, or, you know, able to have those ongoing conversations, just they're not a problem to be solved. And so thank you guys for listening, and just be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube or just wherever you listen to your podcasts.